Good evening, members. We're going to get going, and as I shared on the House floor, it is my intent not to keep us here very long. So I'm looking for a 60-minute hearing, 30 minutes on the first bill and 30 minutes on the other. And I'm going to ask all of you to help me hold to that. So if I start going over, just sort of start waddling papers and throwing at me. And yeah, exactly. Do that. Yeah, exactly. That'll work.
Speeches to the minimum.
Is that
talking here,
Mr. Chairman? Is that just for now?
That apply to me?
We'll try it as a trial, a pilot run.
Probably wouldn't work on the House floor.
So with that, members, so this is an informational hearing. We're not going to move bills. However, I'm going to call forward Representative Clark to present House File 2113. Representative Clark, good evening. And you've got some testifiers as well. I've got them listed here, but I think you may have a couple more as well. And so what we'll do is we'll follow your lead in terms of the folks that you've got on your list that you want to call forward. And we've got 30 minutes, Representative
Clark. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm really pleased to bring forth this House file. It's a bill that came to me from talking with neighbors and you know, paying attention to the news and some of the issues around drowning that we've had in our state. So House File 2113 basically would require that public schools have aquatics instruction. And it does that by, you know, saying that it needs to be in the school curriculum, but it also provides opportunities for those schools who don't have access to a pool within 10 miles to provide those students with water safety and other kinds of instruction. And we'll hear some more about what that can be. Basically, Mr. Chairman and members, this is a survival issue for children in our state. The drowning levels that we experience are just unacceptable. You're going to hear some numbers that talk about the racial disparities related to drowning, and that's really part of this whole issue. I would say in addition to this being an education issue, it's really a civil rights issue, and as we go forward, we'll talk about some of the ways that that is true. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to start right away with one of the people who helped me think about the need for this bill, and Hannah Leader, if you'd come forward. And maybe bring some of your testifiers, and we'll have a couple chairs.
Good evening and welcome to the committee. It's our custom here that as people speak, they announce themselves, especially the first time. So as you begin to speak, if you can just tell us your name and then tell us what you want to tell us. So good evening. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. My name is Hannah Leader, and I'm just so thrilled to have the opportunity. I need to have it closer.
Yep.
Okay. Is this better?
Yes. Okay. Yes, thank you.
I'm just so thrilled to have this opportunity to testify in front of you because I've been pretty much immersed in swimming 24/7 for the last 4 years working on the Phillips Pool. And it was during that project of trying to get the funding for this pool that we really started researching pools and swimming in Minneapolis and in Minnesota and just learned all sorts of really alarming statistics as we went through this process that Minnesota has really high drowning rates for minorities. We have, from 2000 to 2005, we had the highest African-American drowning rate, and we have the second highest Native American drowning rate in the nation. In Minnesota, drowning is the leading cause of accidental death for African-American children ages 5 to 14, and that has been amply displayed in the drownings in Minneapolis all in the last few years. Every one of the drownings in the last few years have been African-American children. So the need for this, I think, is just very, very important that all the children in the state have the opportunity to learn to swim. It's a life-saving skill. It's an outdoor access skill. It's a health. It's a skill that you can do once you know how to swim. You can participate in swimming your entire life. And we're so proud of our watery identity. We're the land of 10,000 lakes. That I think. For Minnesota to take this historic step and ensure that every single child in this state learns to swim, I think just fits our watery state identity. And the interesting thing is, too, there's studies that have been come out, and I think there needs to be more research on that, and I'm hoping that we're going to have an opportunity to do that. But the link between swimming and academic achievement There's a study that was done with 7,000 kids, and these are preschool kids. And what this study found is every one of the kids that learned to swim performed better academically on all sorts of different measures than the kids that did not know how to swim, regardless of their race, their socioeconomic status, their gender. They perform better. So there's something really significant linked to swimming in the and the brain when children are learning how to swim. And the connections to health, that, you know, health, swimming will help with diabetes, asthma, and childhood obesity, because it's getting kids active and it's getting them in the outdoors so they can participate in all sorts of outdoor activities. So I just really support this bill, and I really hope that it can move forward. And as it moves forward, we can think outside the box and figure out ways to get it funded and, you know, get it written and ensure that all kids in the state learn to swim. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leader. And this committee has heard testimony over the course of the last several years, not on point with swimming, but certainly on the interconnect between physical activity,
yep,
and a number of other, beneficial desired outcomes, including increased academic outcomes.
That's right.
And so I think as we continue to learn through the sciences, just how the brain functions, and the role that physical activity plays in helping to wire the brain, if you will, yep, but also in terms of other issues like reducing stress, et cetera, that makes it possible to be in a place where you're more adapted to learning. So it's not surprising to me to hear that. I'm just very curious, in terms of the statistics that you gave, and there's no need to do it now, but perhaps some Representative Clark, if you could follow up at some near future, would be good to be able to access, whatever database that, you pulled that information. It's pretty alarming information that you shared.
It actually came from the CDC.
Okay, from the CDC. Very well. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. Leader? All right.
Representative Clark. We have several witnesses who would
wonderful
like to say hello.
All right. Well, welcome, guys. Welcome to the committee. So the way this works is you got to tell us your name, and then you can tell us what you want to tell us.
Okay, my name is Andrew. I'm learning how to swim, but I still don't know. But I'm like, I still can't go to the deep end, and that affects how like the activities I do, like canoeing and sailing, and so I'm supporting this bill. And I want, and I think that all the kids in Minnesota should learn how to swim, so then they won't have to drown. And yeah.
Well said, Andrew. Thank you. Wow, you're a terrific testifier. And how old are you?
10.
You're 10 years old. Wow. And is there a swimming pool in your school?
Yeah.
There is.
High school. It's not inside, but it's outside.
It's inside. I'm sorry, it's inside what?
It's outside.
Oh, outside. A waiting pool. Okay. All right. But it looks like you're working your way up through being able to be in the deep end. Where are you going for your swimming classes? Are you taking swimming classes right now?
I took some in the summer.
Uh-huh.
At Blaisdell YMCA.
At the YMCA, yeah. Well, that's where my kids and my grandkids learn to swim as well. Andrew, thank you so much. All right. And now we have another good-looking young man who wants to say something, it looks like. Why don't you tell us your name?
My name is Victor.
Hey, Victor. How are you?
Good.
Good. What do you have to say? What are you thinking?
I don't know how to swim, and I want to learn so I could go in the deep end without drowning.
Okay. That is very important, Victor. Yeah. And Victor, how old are you?
8.
You're 8 years old. You're my grandson's age. You're in second grade?
Yeah.
Yep, right on. Good. Do you go to the same school? You don't. Is there a swimming?
No.
I should let you give you time to answer. Is there a swimming pool in your school?
No.
There is none. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Are there any questions from committee members for Andrew or Victor? Or comments. Representative Erickson.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, testifiers. Do you take swimming lessons during the summer?
How many days a week do you swim?
I can actually answer that for him because he was in a program. He was in a special program that the Minneapolis Park Board had paid for in 2012. They had paid for 10 kids in Minneapolis to get sailing lessons at the Lake Calhoun Sailing School. And as part of that, then they found out that they needed to be able to swim in order to be in the sailing program. So they asked us if we would put together a program. And so that's what he's talking about when he had the swimming lessons. It was part of that special program. It was paid for by the park board. So he got 10 swimming lessons that summer. It's not a regular thing.
Okay.
How about you, Victor? Are you taking swimming lessons?
Not that much.
Okay. All right. Good. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Ms. Schmitz?
Ms. Leader, I believe.
Leader. I'm sorry. How many, or can you answer this question about Minneapolis Public Schools? Are there any buildings that have been closed over the years that do have pools?
Ms. Leader.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Minneapolis public schools are, in my opinion, in pretty dire shape when it comes to aquatics. The pool that we've been working on for the last 4 years to save used to be a Minneapolis public school pool. In 1986, they gave it to the Minneapolis Park Board, and then it was ran by the Boys and Girls Club. There's also Sabathany that used to be the Bryant Junior High. That is a pool in the basement of it that's been closed for decades.
Oh.
There's two other pools, Olson and Franklin on the north side, that were closed, and I think Lincoln may have had a pool closed. But right now, Minneapolis has got 393,000 people, and they have three pools. A six-lane competition pool in the far southwest corner, a five-lane practice pool in the far northeast corner, and a therapy pool along the river. So for the most part, the children in Minneapolis do not have the opportunity through the schools at all to learn to swim. Even trying to be on a swim team is a major problem in Minneapolis. It's a big big issue.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another question for you, Ms. Leader. As far as accessibility to our lakes, are there, that you know of, community education programs that provide swimming lessons at our lakes here in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because Minneapolis, the city of lakes, it's got a lot of lakes. The two main urban cores, the south side and the north side, I mean, there are no lakes in the area that we're in Minneapolis. But what else is interesting is because there's so little aquatics happening in Minneapolis, there was actually Linden Hills paid for kids to have swimming lessons at the at a lake in Minneapolis, and they got almost no kids going because they don't know how to swim, and so they don't want to go to the lakes because the lakes are cold. In their minds, they're dirty compared to swimming pool water, and they can't see the bottoms, and so they just, we're already afraid of the water, we can't swim, so we're not going to go there and be more afraid. So it really needs to be, you know, gradual. That's even the program we were talking about, the sailing program. We were doing it in the Blaisdell Y, but part of the program was to get them to the lakes twice, so they would be acclimated and see what lake water was like before they had to take their test to be able to sail. So, and then on top of that, you know, the majority, there's like 20,000 people right in the neighborhood that we are, to try to transport 20,000 people, or, you know, 20,000 kids down to a lake, probably more expensive than building a pool. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. That was very informative.
Yes, indeed. Representative Clark.
I just would like our other witness to have a chance to speak.
Good. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Quanta Magachick. I'm in support of this bill. I come from a kind of rough neighborhood, a lot of gangs, a lot of violence. And I just think this would give the kids a chance, something to do that's supervised, instead of just being at, you know, the parks. You know, them are kind of recruiting grounds for gangs around my neighborhood, so I just think it'll give the kids something to do that's something positive. Thank you.
Indeed. And Mr. is it Magachick your last name? Or?
Yeah, Magachick.
So Magachick is, and is that an Ojibwe name or the Dakota name? Or is it
Comanche.
Comanche. Okay, yeah. Very good. I thought I hadn't heard that one before, so yeah. So let me ask, so did you grow up in Minneapolis then? And if you did, were there swimming pools available to you as when you were these guys' age?
No.
Okay. All right. Good. Are there any other questions? Representative Leidinger and then Representative Kreisha. Representative Leidinger.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I also agree all kids should know how to swim. I went into the Navy, and I wanted to make sure that I knew how to swim before I went in. But, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and my line of questioning is going to be on outside activities and during the summer, because that's what we did. We didn't have a lot of pools back then. And all my friends, we had to go to the beach. And, you know, you had to get your feet dirty, and you had to go there. And now, this was over in Wisconsin. Now, in Minnesota here, we do have a lot of lakes. And I want to kind of go on the same line of questioning, but is there a way that we can kind of wrap that into this bill somehow using this, using the summertime to do this? Because, we've talked about a lot of different things. You know, okay, this, you know, kids that swim and they do better in school and things like that. Well, we can say the same thing for music lessons, or we could, you know, or we could have just regular calisthenics. And it's swimming, at least up here, has always been more of a summertime program, and that we would, have the kids go to the lakes. And I know that we have a lot of pools that have been built since the 60s. Is there a way that you can we can rework this bill to work in the summer program?
Representative Clark.
Oh, I just want to say, Representative Leidinger, that this is an informational hearing, so I'm very open to ideas. I'm very open to ideas. This bill is evolving. I want to later on tell you some information I got from a family where the young child drowned, 12-year-old child drowned just recently, who has some additions to this bill, too. So your ideas are very important to me, and so we can continue to talk about that. I welcome that.
Well, that's just the direction that I think we should explore.
Very well, Representative Leidinger. Representative Krish, I believe, had a question as well.
Thank you, Chair. And just two quick questions. Have you thought about what's the optimal age to start these youngsters in the swimming? Is this a grade school program?
Actually, the younger the kids learn to swim, the better. Not only are they then protected longer from the possibility of drowning, but it's easier for them to learn to swim when they're younger. By the time you get to, you know, junior high or high school, and you've got, I don't want to get my hair wet or something like that, you know, when they haven't swam before. It's just more barriers, and we want to make it easier. So definitely the younger they learn, the better.
Representative Christian.
And if you, Representative Clark, if you have a, do you have a comment? Okay, so let's say it's, if we're going to agree, kindergarten. And I'm just thinking through this as you are with informational. What about the students that maybe aren't ready, that maybe they are too fearful, or there's some phobias they're going to have to get over? How are we going to handle that with all of the students?
Yeah, I actually teach swimming lessons, too, at the YWCA, and there's a great difference in kids in the how if they're afraid or not. Some kids, you know, take to it and can go one time, and they're through, and they've learned, and, you know. But other ones take four or five times through beginners. So I think that we have to take that into consideration and just keep going. But the younger you get the kids in the water and get acclimated to the water and get experience in the water, the easier it's going to be for them to learn to swim. They build up more fears the older they get. So,
Representative Krisha.
And thank you. And that actually leads me to a second question. So you're a certified swimming instructor now. I don't know if Ed Minnesota is going to speak to this, or I'm just curious about what's going to happen with the certification for teachers. Is this going to happen in the FIAD? Are they now going to have to become certified in water safety? How do we envision some of that?
If you don't mind, Representative Krisha, let's wait. We do have representatives who will be speaking from the various. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. And let me just say, Ms. Leader and Andrew, Victor, and Mr. Manichek, I grew up in the west side of Chicago, and I was an inner city kid. It was a pretty rough part of town during a very rough period of time. And of course, you know, it's a bigger city than Minneapolis, but Minneapolis can get pretty big if you're 8 or 10 years old, like Victor and Andrew. And I'm pretty sure very few people around me my age were swimmers. There were no pools nearby. There was a pool down in Garfield Park, which was a good mile, you know, from us, but a mile through rough neighborhoods is a long way to to travel, especially when you're 8 or 10 years old. And so I you know, when Representative Clark brought me this bill, you know, I had an immediate, you know, kind of flashback to that period of time. My kids all learned to swim. I made sure, you know, through, but it was through a Y program. We do have a swimming pool in on the west side of St. Paul,
yes.
Where I live now. It had been shut down, and the community did rally to work to get that pool open. And to Representative Leidinger's point, one of the things that they're exploring is a partnership between, because the school does, the district does own that pool, is a partnership between the school district, the neighborhood, and the YMCA in West St. Paul. And there seems to be some kind of promise that playing itself out. So I think there are, you know, several approaches that I think we can pursue here. I know there was an article in the Pioneer Press in St. Paul a couple years ago where, similar to the data you shared, Ms. Leader, they spoke of the likelihood of drowning being high among our African-American and many of our East African immigrant communities as well, because of very little or no exposure to swimming. I'm sorry, there was one other comment and question, Representative Yarusso, and then we'll move on with your other folks, Representative Clark. Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's an aspect of this bill that I think we haven't really talked about, and that it does mention that if a school doesn't have swimming facilities, that the emphasis would be on water safety training. That's an extremely important point, that people really need to have intentional training in water safety. And it's not just as simple as don't go near the water, because there's also safe rescue techniques and what do you do if someone's in trouble and how do you get yourself out of trouble and things like that. And some of the criticism that I've seen in the online comments, rather vicious, centers around, oh, well, isn't that the parents' responsibility? And Chair Mariani just mentioned some of our immigrant groups, and that's an extremely important point, because we can't presume that every family has grown up like my family has around water from time immemorial. My ancestors came from Norway and Finland and Sweden, so I mean, generation after generation after generation knows how to swim and knows what to do and all that. But you have many people who have not had that experience, and so you have parents that do not know how to teach the children themselves. You also, because we don't have the facilities, we've been closing down the community pools and whatnot, you're shrinking your group of people that do have those skills. And so I think that we need to keep that in mind, that that's an important aspect of this, is just the water safety part of it.
Indeed, and I do note that the bill speaks to the teaching of water safety as well. So, Ms. Leader, thank you. Andrew, thank you for coming. Victor, thank you. You guys were awesome. You did a great job. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Mr. Manichek, thank you for looking out for the young bloods as well. So it's good to have you here. So thank you, Ms. Leader. Representative Clark, you had some other folks?
Oh, yes, I do.
MFT, is that correct?
Well, there's several.
We have about 10, 12 minutes to
okay,
go.
Okay, well, maybe I'll ask people to be brief, but I would like to just ask you to allow a few moments for Josh Gerbund from Wilderness Inquiry, the American Red Cross. Maybe they both come up together.
Okay.
And then after that, we have people from representatives of the teachers' unions and from the Minneapolis School Board.
Let's get everybody up here so we can maximize our time. And good evening, sir. Please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you for taking the time to hear us. My name is Josh Garibunda. With Wilderness Inquiry, we're a nonprofit based in Southeast Minneapolis. We work on getting people outdoors for overnight activities, canoe events. I ran a program over at Wilderness Inquiry called the Urban Wilderness Canoe Adventures Program. It was a partnership with a number of local organizations in the national park to get over 10,000 families and youth down the Mississippi River on a canoe trip or through an overnight experience. I'm in support of this bill because these are the type of initiatives that create access. One thing that I was able to see firsthand was how inaccessible the outdoors is because of certain cultural barriers in certain communities. For example, last year it was very difficult convincing summer school students to come out for these canoe trips on local lakes, on the chain of lakes, for example, because a lot of their families had so much fear. So I, to piggyback off the comment made earlier, there is a lot of fear instilled culturally that our students have to deal with. So having the accessibility to learn how to swim at an earlier age gives them the opportunity to break down that barrier.
Thank you, Mr. Garibaldi. Very quick question. Is there any kind of partnerships that your nonprofit, is it Outdoor, what's it called again?
Wilderness Inquiry.
Wilderness Inquiry. Any partnerships that you've been able to develop with local school districts in regards to your offerings?
Yes. We work with Minneapolis and St. Paul Public Schools.
Okay.
Through Minneapolis, we work through a summer credit recovery program. So it doesn't give it doesn't have full access to a large number of students, but the students that are required to get more credits to finish high school, for example. And then in St. Paul, we work with a small population of St. Paul students, too.
Okay, very well. Thank you. And good evening. You must be Miss Mary Barber Schmitz. Is that right?
That's correct. Right. Yes.
I did okay there. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Mary Barber Schmitz, and I'm the aquatic specialist for the Minnesota Territory of the American Red Cross. And I want to thank you for the committee for the opportunity to share with you our American Red Cross position on House File 2113. The American Red Cross supports efforts to require schools to provide students with aquatics instruction, especially in light of the recent deaths that have occurred in school swimming programs. We support this effort because death by drowning is a leading public health problem in all countries, including the United States, where drowning is the second leading cause of unintentional death for children 0 to 14 years of age. Drowning prevention requires public and government support. Beginning at a young age, everyone, regardless of ability and background, should have access to training in water safety, personal survival, and water rescue. The vast majority of deaths can be prevented. Two keys to lowering the risk for drowning are water safety education and knowing how to swim. For 100 years, the Red Cross water safety education has been instrumental in lowering nationwide drowning rates and teaching people how to be safe in and around the water. More than 6.5 million people a year receive Red Cross training in first aid, water safety, and other skills that help to save lives. And in Minnesota last year, nearly 48,000 people reported taking Red Cross aquatics classes. Of those 48,000, we had more than 40,000 participants who went through swimming and water safety courses. Most of them are Red Cross Learn to Swim classes, kind of aimed at teaching people how to learn to swim. Thank you for the opportunity to support this proposal. On behalf of the American Red Cross, we look forward to working with you to consider this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Barbara Schmitz. So thank you for the work that you do. Ms. Sundin, I've got you on the list.
Sure. To go before the boss. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just quickly, I did some research on this matter, so I'm just going to provide you the academic background, if you will. I'm Louise Sundin, Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, and I've always been an Olympic nut, and maybe it's because I taught Greek and Roman mythology to ninth graders for 30 years, but I always watched the Olympics, and I was taken in the summer London Olympics by the three African-American swimmers who were all medal winners, but one of them in particular, Cullen Jones was his name, has now taken up the issue of teaching swimming and saving children of color from drowning, and he has an organization now where he goes around the country. It's called Make a Splash Initiative, and he was shocked and stunned, he said, by the statistics. And just really quickly, the study by the University of Memphis and the USA Swimming Organization showed that around 70% of African American and 62% of Hispanic children don't know how to swim, making them obviously more vulnerable to drowning compared to about 40% of white children. A report out exactly a year ago today, the U.S. Government Consumer Product Safety Commission says that government data shows that African American and Hispanic children between the ages of 5 and 15 are at higher risk of drowning, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission and the Centers for Disease Control say that between the ages of 5 and 19, African-American children are 6 times more likely to drown in pools than both white and Hispanic children. So the head of the CPSC says the lives of countless children can be saved even this summer. Learning how to swim saves lives. Teach all children to swim. Jones now travels the nation, as I mentioned, with his organization, trying to convince young people that they ought to learn how to swim, particularly young minority kids or kids of color. And he says that when he first thought about it, he thought that it was probably an income thing, or it was accessibility, as in your case, or but what the University of Memphis found was that it was generational, and it was fear, flat out fear. And it was a fear that was transferred from parent to daughter to son, and that there were parents, mothers, or grandmothers who would not allow their daughters to learn how to swim because they were so fearful. And then that mother, of course, would not allow her children to learn how to swim. So this multi-generational fear is what is preventing not just the lack of accessibility. So we think that there's a societal issue here that you can do something about. We can all do something about looking after the physical development as well as all the others. And it's another opportunity for us to partner in the community with all kinds of opportunities, such as districts can partner with municipalities. There's 54 municipal pools in the state. Parks and Rec, YM, YW, other fitness entities, and that brings the community together with the children. And we have over 10,000 bodies of water, so we can either drown-proof our children, or we will have to continue to worry about their safety.
Or we could drain the 10,000 bodies of water. No. But I don't think we're going to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So you know what? You referred to the boss, and so let me just jump over.
He's going to go last, Chair. I'm going to be brief. I'm just going on the record. Thank you, Chair, committee members, Jody Boer.
Your name for the record.
Yes, Jody Boer, Education Minnesota, and we just wanted to get on the record very briefly that we strongly support and thank Representative Clark for this bill. Anything that helps children be safer, have a better opportunity to learn, improve their academic achievement, of course, we fully support. So thank you, and we look forward to further discussions about this, including certification. We don't have time for that, but be happy to have that conversation later. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Now we'll get the boss.
Yes.
Called the boss.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mahmoud Nur. I'm a school board member in Minneapolis. I may not be speaking for the Minneapolis Public Schools, but I'm more passionate about giving our kids opportunity in life so they can learn swimming. It's about the safety. I think you have seen the recent reports of a child, Abdullahi Sharif, who drowned recently in a swimming pool. It's something that we have to live with every day. We live in a state whereby water plays a big part in our life, a place for, you know, we have got 10,000 lakes. But for us to be talking about giving our kids an opportunity to swim and learn about the safety around the water, something which is, we have to look back. Who are we talking about? I think Hannah provided us a good statistics about, it's more about the children of color. Students who need that opportunity, not only in academic, but also in physical education. We are failing our kids not only academic, but we're also failing them in physical education. So giving our kids an opportunity so that they can succeed in life. It's about promoting physical, social, emotional, intellectual development of our children. We've got far too many kids who are in special ed who need that service whereby they can have that relaxation in the pool. It's more about therapy and helping them grow to become successful members of our society. As you all know, the Oscar nominee, who was also a student in Minneapolis Public Schools, didn't know how to swim. Although he was one of those who were picked up to be in Captain Phelps, he didn't know how to swim. So he had to learn how to swim in order to be part of that Oscar nominee.
There were some very scary scenes out in open water.
Absolutely, as you can tell. So even in my personal life, in a swimming pool, I started drowning. while I was so young. Someone had to pull me out. It's something that I've learned a lesson in life. I can take my kids to the swimming lessons, but there are far too many parents who cannot afford to do that. We go to almost 3 weeks swimming lessons every summer, from age 3 to, you know, I've got 8-year-old. So I give them that opportunity. Too many parents don't have that access. So I'm asking you to look into ways that we can provide that opportunity to all the kids in Minnesota, so we can be proud of, and they can become the next Olympic champions, and we can be proud of that. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Noor, for being with us this evening. And please know that we were all saddened to hear the news in your community in that tragic event.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark, thank you all. There is, I think, Representative Swatsky has a question or a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, as this is an informational piece of a bill or a hearing, one of the things that I remember as I was raising my children, when I went to their medical doctor, that was one of the things that he would also talk about. So just as other information to maybe latch on to, that our pediatricians or doctors having that as one of their checklists yet today, as far as, okay, now, I mean, obviously it was like nearing summer, do you know how important it is to be able to make sure that if you dive off, you know, they're, you know, making sure of the depth and that kind of thing. And I don't know if it was just our immediate facility or medical arrangements that had that, or if it was a you know, from the medical association or what, but maybe that's another piece that we could just have a friendly reminder to or some kind of a cooperation with the medical field as well, and you know, that happened at Well Baby Checkups or Well Child, but just something to think about.
Representative Clark, your bill gets better and better as
I know. Thank you.
And before you comment, I do want to acknowledge Representative Dean Ray Dean from Minneapolis, who stopped in and joined us. Welcome, glad you're here, Representative Clark. We have one more person, and then we're going
to
move on.
So I just want to say, members, thank you for this opportunity to talk about this issue. As I mentioned earlier, it's a public safety issue. It's certainly a life and death issue. It's also a civil rights issue. You heard some degree of the discussion about the disparities related to race. There's some documents that you should have that were passed out that go into that a little bit more. One of the persons who couldn't be with us today was Dr. Samuel Myers from the University of Minnesota, who's written extensively about this. He's one of the national experts in terms of race disparities and swimming and that sort of thing. I might mention that there's a number of other states looking at this: Missouri, Connecticut, South Carolina. So I really thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hope, members, that we can come forward with this a bill with a chance to vote on and make it better. And I really invite Representative Leidiger, you mentioned, and others, you know, ideas that you have, I'm very open to them. I want to make sure we can make a very good bill. Sure. And you got to do it before you leave.
Representative Clark, we do have one other person who wanted to testify, okay. Ms. Bezanoff. And then we're going to move ahead. I know we've got Representative Quisha Keel. We can do your questions very quickly. Yeah, very well.
And thank you, Chair. And just, Representative Clark, as you go out and you come back, I would hope, or please go out to the special ed community as well and talk to them and understand the accommodations and the modifications that they might have to make as this moves through.
Good advice.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's important.
You're welcome. Good evening, Ms. Bezanoff.
Good evening.
I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
You did. Last name, yeah. My name is Snezhana Bezanoff, and I'm with Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all the Minnesota school districts and every school board, elected school board member, and we share the same concern and goals with Representative Clark of safety of students and really of everybody in Minnesota. We want all children to be educated, to be fit, healthy, and know how to navigate the waters. We do have some concerns with this bill, if it would go forward as far as implementation and funding. We represent the whole state. Not every school district has a pool or access to a pool or close enough being to the pool, so it wouldn't be an even playing field for all the students. And some of the things that we thought about as far as this legislation is, if there's no pool, then, you know, in that school or nearby, then, children would have to be bused to that area. So you have to take them out of the school, bus them. They would have to change, swim, take the lesson, come back, go back to class. So we're concerned taking that classroom instructional time away, as well as, you know, what about winter and summer, and then, I mean, not summer, but spring and fall. We have, you know, really late winters.
I think we
winters.
Have spring in the state of Minnesota.
Starting June 1st, right?
We might one day, yes.
So that's kind of implementational issues to think about, and some of the funding concerns would be really as far as, you know, hiring that teacher that or the instructor who has those proper qualifications, renting a pool, or renting the time from the pool, renting or, you know, hiring lifeguards, make sure we can't bring a class of, you know, a whole bunch of students with just one lifeguard. I mean, I don't know what the safety requirements would be, but that would be a concern for us. If, you know, we talked about how a lot of schools in Minneapolis Public Schools closing pools because the upkeep is so expensive. So, and the maintenance, so that's, you know, another thing. Transportation, having the extra for those school districts who don't have pool right in the school. So they would have to bus the students. Again, you have to pay for transportation for that. And the extra liability coverage, again, a lot of maintaining a pool is expensive for local governments. So they've been choosing, unfortunately, to close them down because they can't afford them. Another thing that we thought about was student safety. And then with having that for the school districts that don't have a pool nearby and having kind of instructional time and learning how to do air strokes and kicks and things like that, would that really give a student a false sense of ability to swim? You know, just a thing to think about. So, again, I mean, we like local control and not kind of force every school district into the same model. The current standards as far as physical education that have been put together by MDE, as well as a health and physical education quality teacher network, do include aquatic opportunities there. And I know, Chair, you have in your omnibus bill, you have MDE has to study the physical education. So I don't know if that's something that could be looked at as well there. So those are our concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Bezanov. I appreciate your testimony, and I trust you'll be working with Representative Clark if Representative Clark continues with this bill during the interim. Thank you.
Thank
Representative
you.
Keel, and then we're going to move on. So, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, while I really think that swimming is important and making sure your children learn how to swim, I grew up in the summertime open pool in northern Minnesota where that was my mother's way to do her shopping. We went to lessons and she got her groceries. Worked best for both of us. Anyway, and I visually remember that pool being so full you couldn't hardly move in there. So it was a great place for students, children to be of all ages, shapes, and sizes. In fact, I wondered how the lifeguards sometimes managed all those kids. I remember the whistle blowing. We all had to clear the pool to make sure that there was nobody in danger. But while I think this is a very important thing, I also had the experience of serving on a school board with a pool. And in fact, our pool just got shut down the other day, and I'm concerned about all these requirements. And what happened was the filter died. And so at $250,000 to fix it, it's shut down. They're not even sure if they're going to get it going next year. And they have a swim team, and they have some accessibility in teaching students to swim. Mm-hmm. So while we think about this, we have to think about how it affects the schools. In my case, the school owns the pool. In my one local community, there are different shapes and sizes. This is a joint powers, so the city helps pay for it. But there's some real serious costs with having a pool in the school. And it's been shut down before because we just can't afford to keep it running. There are, you know, if we're going to do pool swimming in the summer or in the winter, we have to also think about the fact that it can't be open air. It has to be closed. And there are some other issues with moisture and the buildings. We've had to replace roofs. And just all of those issues have to be considered when we're thinking about having schools provide pools. And that might not be the solution. I certainly think that we should encourage children to learn how to swim of all shapes and sizes. And maybe it would help when somebody was talking about their parents not being able to swim. My mother was terrified of the water. She would hardly stick her toe in the water. And she had some bad experience when she was a child. So she did the opposite. She made sure we had lessons. so we weren't afraid. But I think we need to, I can understand the cultural issues, and but we need to really think about access and learning how to use pools and lakes, too. They're not all that bad. I know I don't like the seaweed, but I think that while we're teaching, we need to really think about the cost that we have, you know, the importance of teaching, and do we have enough instructors to actually teach swimming also? That became a problem when we discussed it, actually requiring it of our own school. We talked about doing it, and that became an issue. So, anyway, thank you.
Well, I could just thank you, Representative
briefly respond, and I know you need to go on.
I do, Representative Clark.
I just want to say, I think your comments were important, and I guess if we think this is an important state requirement, then I would hope the state would find some ways to help our local school districts pay for the costs. And I think it's so important. This is not a matter of a luxury. This is a life and death situation for many of our young people. So I thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you for working on this issue and bringing it to us, Representative Clark. With that, members, we're going to move on to House File 3045, which is authored by a rep named Mariani. However, I'm going to ask Mr. Jim Grathwall to come forward and tell us about the bill and why, what it does, and why it's important. And then we've got some other folks who want to speak to the issue. And members, we did have a bit of this conversation as we were putting together the omnibus bill in the last couple of weeks of the committee's time. And Representative Keough, I think you were remember you were working on some amendment language both here and on the House floor, and we were just trying to work our way through it. But I thought it's an important enough issue for us to dive into a little bit, and my hope is that that it's an issue that we return to sooner than later. Mr. Grathwall.
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Grathwall with Minneapolis Public Schools. We proposed this legislation in part because we...
Mr. Grathwall, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm going to interrupt here. I need to do some business here. We have a bunch of minutes, and I'm going to start let me make sure I got the right dates. Yeah, so the first set of minutes that we need to have approved are the minutes of March 11th, and I'm wondering, Representative Erickson, if you would be so kind as to move those minutes.
I will move March 11th with the recommendation that General Registry be edited to say General Register.
Very well.
That's appropriate for several of the minutes.
Oh, okay. Very well.
March 11th. Do you want me to keep going?
I think we can do these all as one motion. I think so.
March 13th with that same correction. And that's in several places. March 14.
Representative Briner.
So this is a personal issue. I took on the bottom of the page says Representative Briner renewed his motion.
Oh my goodness!
I would appreciate if that were correct.
I wonder who that person is. All right. So that'll be an amendment on the March 14th minutes.
March
Representative Erickson.
17.
With the same registry to register.
March 20, there is need to correct at the top of the third page that the meeting was adjourned and reconvened. The meeting would have been recessed.
Yes, indeed.
And I think it's probably a.m., not p.m., correct?
Correct.
I don't think we worked that night and then
I don't think so.
Earlier than that.
So with that amendment?
Probably chair didn't lay the bill over either after that. So check to see that order. Oh, I think there's just a repetition maybe.
So we'll strike that line.
So we can strike.
I think Representative Isaacson wrote these early in the morning.
And Representative Wills, I think, has something to say too.
Representative Wills.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think most of them got covered, but just a couple other just quick corrections.
Please.
On the March 11th minutes on the second page, just for consistency, it was House File 2five 1-4, and it was incorrectly labeled as 2-5-1-7 in one spot.
Yep.
And then on the minutes for March 13th, on the second page, Chair Breinert, which was also not spelled correctly, assumed the gavel at 6:50 a.m., and it should have been p.m., I believe, because
yes,
that was evening.
That's on the second page. Yep.
Evening meeting once we had reconvened.
Very well.
And then I believe this is the last one. On the March 14th minutes on the fourth and fifth pages, the testifiers for House File 2672 ended up at the end on page 5, and I think they should be inserted with the actual context of the bill on the middle of page 4.
You have that?
And I can hand this.
So this is the March 14th minutes on page 4, toward the bottom.
Yes. Well, page 5 has the list of the testifiers for House File 2672 right at the end. And it should be just moved up, I believe.
Mr. Graf.
Be inserted with the bill.
They came in late. That's when they testified.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was, it seemed odd.
Okay. Very well.
Thank you.
And then Representative Erickson, I think we also
March
need...
March 21st, yes.
Yes.
So this is a good collaborative way to talk to Jamal, who had quite a peak in front
yes,
of
he
him.
Did.
To,
yes, he did. Yes, he did. Well,
I
thank you.
I remember those days, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson and Representative Wills, for your help with this. So all in favor of adopting the minutes of March 11th, 13th, 14th, 17th, 20th, and 21st as corrected, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. And we'll send Representative Isaacson out to the some room somewhere.
I didn't take a good vote against my party, so there was.
There it is. Mr. Grathwall.
Mr. Chair.
Tell us about this bill. House File 3045.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Grathwall, Minneapolis Public Schools. Every bill tries to solve a problem. Some bills just try and solve one problem. This bill doesn't try and solve all problems. But what we're trying to solve, the problem we're trying to solve in this bill is be more competitive recruiting and hiring and retaining high-quality teachers. And in the case of Minneapolis Public Schools, we're particularly interested in expanding our access to teachers of color and bilingual teachers. And this strategy we're proposing is empower our commissioner and board of teaching to look at other states' licensure programs, find out which one of those are good and successful and high quality, and then go after their best teachers and recruit them. Why wouldn't we do that? And then recruit them and on the basis of the strength of a review by BOT and commissioner, say, your licensure works for us. We're going to give you our reciprocal licensure, and we'd like you to come work with us here in Minnesota. So this is premised on a couple notions. While we have high standards in the state of Minnesota, which we like and we want to keep and we wouldn't want to harm, we believe there might be other states out there in the 50 states who are producing good teachers, and we should go and compete for some of those teachers. And I'll let you know, we're hiring 300 teachers a year in Minneapolis to replace retiring teachers. And that's 10% of our workforce. And that's a heavy lift each year. And that's what our projection is. And we'd like to see our workforce, which once was about, when I started with the district in 98, we were in 98, 99, 2000, we had about 18% of our teachers were teachers of color. During enrollment dips and layoffs because of seniority layoffs and last hired first laid off policies, we're at about 10% right now, 8, 9, or 10% students of color. We'd like to boost that. We think that's a key strategy for us for closing the achievement gap, bilingual and teachers of color. And we think this is a strategy that will help us do that. So we'd appreciate your support on that. We think we have, I've been using the metaphor of three tines on our spear to get high-quality teachers in this reciprocity agreement. Tine number one is we empower the Board of Teaching and the Commissioner, who are going to be our sheriffs and deputies for looking for teacher quality. The second tine is they're going to enter into an interstate agreement, reciprocity agreement, only after determining that the licensure process in the other state is adequate and high quality. And the third tine is they'll even have the power to limit that to Illinois, we like your English elementary license, New York, middle science license, or whatever, that they can be specifically spearing the licensures that they find adequate. That's the end of my metaphor and the end of my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very well. Are there any questions for Mr. Grathwell? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you identifying the teachers out of state that you would want to recruit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mr. Erickson, we're not identifying teachers so much, but the legislation would be about identifying other states who have strong licensure processes and who we think are as rigorous as ours. And then, after presuming this bill passes or some reasonable facsimile thereof passes, we would then enter into interstate reciprocity agreements with states whose licensure processes and specific licenses, in some cases, are deemed adequate by our Commissioner and Board of Teaching. Then we would, as a district, start hunting. And how we would start marketing, I'm a lobbyist, not a marketer or a human resource professional, but I'd be happy to get back to you on further detail on our plans to market to other states. But, you know, we have a mobile workforce population. We're competing not just in the state for our teaching, we're competing we're trying to recruit from out of state as well.
And I do note, Mr. Grathwell, as I looked at the language of the bill as introduced, and then the A20-1 amendment, which I think was an amendment that Representative Keel was working on lines 114 through 116, I think to Representative Erickson's question, there was language here about only after determining that the rigor of the teacher licensure or certification requirements in the other states are commensurate with the rigor of Minnesota teacher licensure requirements. So in other words, the first language basically says to the Board of Teaching, you know, hey, you figure it out, you know, and, you know, like you figure out other things.
Right.
This one was more prescriptive about what it is that we asked them to figure out. And actually, I'm going to ask Ms. Dolan to come down very quickly because she is here from the Board of Teaching. And while she does that, however, Representative Erickson, did you want to follow up?
Please. I had a couple of things. So once we identify states that have the same standards for their teachers as we do, assuming they have the same test that those teachers have to pass that we have in our state that we tried to get rid of, that we didn't quite make that, then we're looking for certain characteristics, whether there be teachers of color or is our payment of our teachers enough to recruit them here? Are we paying our teachers better than other states? I'm just throwing out some questions that maybe somebody has the answer to.
What's your what's Minneapolis's experience and success relative to that?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Erickson. Again, I'm not prepared to answer our salary data. I'd be happy to go get that. I planned on emphasizing our excellent climate and recreational opportunities. I think we're, you know, Minnesota is an attractive workforce, where Minneapolis is an attractive city. I think we'd be emphasizing those things, but of course, salary, benefits, and livability. I don't know if Ms. Sundin is still in the room behind me, but
she's watching you.
That's good. But it's recruiting the current generation of people entering the profession or 5 years into the profession. They're motivated by different things than our generation was motivated by. That's. I think I may have exhausted my knowledge on teacher recruitment right now, but I'd be happy to get you additional information in terms of what strategies specifically we would be using to lure teachers to our state to serve the, you know, help us close the achievement gap.
I suggest serving walleye, well prepared.
All those in favor say aye.
Representative Briner, and then I want to hear from Ms. Stone.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may actually be a question more appropriate to Ms. Stone, but I'm concerned, I guess, about what the timeline might look like before we get to this only after determining that the rigor of teacher licensure certification requirements. What is going to be involved in that process, and what timeline do we envision, and how much staffing might it take at the Board of Teaching, and what would the process be? And then this organization, I know we have a handout here in our materials, the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education and Certification. I feel like I don't know enough to know how helpful that organization will be to us in the process, you know, and because if I think about, obviously, we have 50 states, and then you talk about differentiating programs within those states, it looks like a long-term process to get to the point where we could say this licensure is equivalent. So that's my question.
Very well. And Ms. Stone, of course, this is not your bill, but so don't feel you have to defend it. But I think there's some important questions there in terms of Board of Teaching, experiences and expectations. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Certainly. My name is Erin Doan. I'm the Interim Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about this subject. I think that, like many of you, I come this evening with probably more questions than answers or really in need of clarification for board members at this point. I think that over the last couple of years, there have been several charges to both the Board of Teaching and to the Minnesota Department of Education regarding working with out-of-state teacher licensure candidates, and there are many changes that are in process right now. I want to address first the question about the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education. That organization is one that does meet on an annual basis and does host a database or sort of a clearinghouse of information about what is required for licensure across the 50 states or across those states who have signed this agreement. I just want to take the opportunity to clarify that very often this agreement is cited as a source of reciprocity between states. And that's not really the source of the argument itself. That agreement is more about information sharing, or has been in the past, than it is about reciprocity per se. The Commissioner of Education has traditionally signed that agreement because the data that's being exchanged is really coming out of the Minnesota Department of Education's licensing division. So the Board of Teaching certainly, at this point, would have no issue with being a co-signer on that agreement, but I don't think that it really changes the way that we operate in Minnesota for us to lend ourselves to a data sharing agreement. I want to also ask the question, and perhaps Ms. Larson can help me to clarify some of these issues. We do have, statute 122A.90 that talks about the interstate agreement on qualifications of educational personnel. And it has been our working understanding that this actually empowers the board and the Department of Education to work collaboratively and to put into place agreements with other states, really a process or more specific details about how we deal with folks coming from those states. At this time, again, I think the clarification that we're seeking is, how does this change current process? And like Representative Reinert, how do we do that on the number of people that are sitting at our desks right now? What we're talking about, or at least as I understand it, really amounts to approving programs in other states, because there are various programs that lead to licensure in any one state. Right now, we have 32 institutions and over 750 programs in the state of Minnesota, with two people charged with getting all of those programs reviewed and maintaining high standards. That does present a concern. I think that it's worth mentioning. I think that, as I said, opportunity does exist for both the Board of Teaching and Educator Licensing to work with our border states, especially
that are sending the majority of out-of-state candidates to Minnesota to come up with some ideas or agreements about what we can understand about state licensure as a whole coming from those states. Nonetheless, candidates, because of the path to licensure they seek, will have had different experiences ending in a state licensure. I think, again, clarification is probably needed for us to talk about what's expected. Are we really talking about that data sharing agreement through the NASDAQ organization, or are we really talking about some of the charges that are already in statute right now? In addition, you know, certainly I think the board is willing to entertain ideas about what, you know, certainly charge us with being a party to that agreement. We have no problem with that, but definitely have some concerns about how do we consider candidates and the full extent of the credentials they bring to Minnesota and still maintain the high standards that we've set for putting teachers in front of Minnesota classrooms.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Let me just say, because I'll probably forget it, that I want to express my appreciation for your assuming the leadership during this interim period for the Board of Teaching. Very difficult to do that in such a short period of time while all sorts of things are moving, especially legislation. So I just wanted to acknowledge your work. And my understanding is you need to leave relatively soon for something as well. So, okay, is there anything else you want to share before you scoot out of here? Or?
I think that covers it.
Okay, very well. And please feel free to leave as soon as you feel you need to. Representative Brenner, any follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I think my concerns have been well articulated by Ms. Doan here. I think maybe Mr. Grathwell, I would like to hear his response to the concerns laid on the table about the timeline, the process, the relationship of the work to this organization, and maybe the issue of border states that might encompass maybe more closely what might be possible in the short run.
Mr. Grathwell.
Mr. Chair and Member, I'm taking good notes, and I can get back to you on the specific concerns that my colleague raised here. And we can, this is going to be an interim process. We're not taking action tonight. We'll have the ability to continue this conversation.
Mr. Grathwell, just because we're friends, I'm going to interrupt Representative Leidinger. Representative Leidinger?
Ernie.
Chair has not dismissed you yet.
That's correct. Representative Leidinger, a little birdie tells me that you're not standing for re-election. Is that
That's correct.
Yeah. But I just want to say publicly here on the record my appreciation for your participation in this committee. And I want to thank you. No, absolutely. Now he's going to stay. You've been part of, I think, a very good quality process here, of making sure lots of different voices are at the table. And I just want to thank you for bringing that in the spirit of goodwill and authenticity in which you did that. Thank you. Good public servant, sir.
Thank you, and I appreciate it. And I think I told you this 2 years ago. I found new respect for how you handle your committee. I see how both sides work quite well together. I mean, we don't all think the same, but we certainly all want the same for our students. I mean, we want them to be strong, and I mean all of them to be strong and have just a wonderful future, right, when they grow. All of us have reached a level, and we want all of our children to be able to have those opportunities. And I know that this is in good hands, this committee, with you, and as well as the Republicans as well. And I think we should, in the future, keep working together. Of course, I'll be on the outside and leave it to you guys to do the work. So, thanks
well
very much
said,
for recognizing
sir.
Us. Thank you.
Mr. Grathwell, I cut you off in mid-sentence. Do you want to finish, or should I?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm taking good notes here. I'm much more expert in finance and formula than laws and licensure, and we will bring in the heavier guns on the laws of licensure to work on this during the interim.
Very well. Representative Keough, I think, has a question or comment, and Representative Erickson as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Aaron, I didn't catch your last name.
Don't.
Pardon?
Doan.
Okay. Ms. Doan. We didn't get a chance to talk beforehand. And, you know, when I'm listening to you speak about this, I can understand the organization of don't do last-minute things, because I understand when we rush things, we might forget or, you know, get things, get what we would, you know, the goal that we want in the end not to be where we want it to be. But could this be done through cooperation and not necessarily be a legislative push as far as, you know, a requirement from the legislature? Could you manage these, or would it not work that way?
And I believe part of the answer probably involves an interpretation of 122.8.9, but it's a very good question. Ms. Stone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peel, yes, I think that the statutory authority is present for us to be able to work with educator licensing at the Minnesota Department of Education to look at the way we handle licenses coming from particularly border states. I think there really do exist some questions, though, as to how we would look at a variety of different programs that result in licensure in those states, and to figure out how each of those programs may present a different type of match to licensure expectations in Minnesota. I will say, especially over the past year, there definitely have been a number of collaborative committees working through both the board and the department to streamline and to make things more transparent for out-of-state candidates, to figure out what challenges they have with our system, to figure out what pieces they may need to add to earn Minnesota licensure, and just to make it an attainable goal. So, yes, we will continue that collaboration.
Okay.
Representative Q.
The other thing I wondered about was we had this conversation with Representative from Education Minnesota, Mr. Grathwald, you know, especially in regard to our border communities and our graduates coming out of college. My understanding is we don't have a way for them to take the MTLE test in their own colleges. Is there any way to do that online? You know, with regard to especially our border communities, our border states, excuse me, and those colleges, is there some way to work with them on providing that for those students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, I think Pearson Test Centers currently offer the MTLE across all of their centers nationwide, and even to some extent internationally. I think if the question is really, are we offering them at their home institutions, that probably presents a little more of a challenge, being that it is a Minnesota-specific exam. But that doesn't mean that our conversation has to stop there. We could certainly try to look at some alternative options.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is that, you know, first of all, I would think you would be looking for different ways to be prepared to teach in a classroom, you know, options that you would have, whether you were teaching in Minnesota or in another state. And, you know, that was one of the thoughts that I know we can't dictate to colleges what they're going to offer or not, but it certainly would be a way to encourage them. And then I have one other thing I just want to make comment of. I found out that one of my schools has hired, it certainly would be a way to encourage them. And then I have one other thing I just want to make comment of. I found out that one of my schools has hired an excellent teacher. She is licensed in North Dakota, which is typical for the teachers that come into my communities. This teacher has a licensure from 7 to 12, which was required by North Dakota. However, she has to have 5 through 12, and so her superintendent called me and said she will have to go back and student teach, when in fact she's already been teaching well over, I think, 5 years, in order to keep this, you know, she's on a waiver right now, in order to keep the job, and they want to keep her. They're having a hard time hiring somebody in her field. And I'm just wondering, is there some way to adjust that so that as long as she's not teaching fifth and sixth grade, does it matter?
Ms. Stone, you probably know that in our omnibus bill, we addressed that issue. And I was watching the Senate floor debate earlier today where they also added that amendment on to their omnibus bill as well. Okay. So you're absolutely correct in terms of identifying. You and I had a great conversation on the floor a week or two ago about communities like yours, which are different than communities like mine. You're in a different part of the state where you're pulling from a population mass, not always from the state here as well. And so I think we've got the fix in the omnibus bill. But Ms. Donan, anything you want to add to that? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, yes, I think we have seen that issue come up over and over for candidates. I think another piece of the puzzle is helping higher ed institutions in Minnesota that recommend for licensure when someone doesn't meet Minnesota standards, helping them to understand that describing what's normally called a practicum or describing an opportunity to watch a teacher is not, in fact, the same thing as a student teaching requirement. It doesn't mean another 12 weeks in front of a classroom for an experienced teacher. So I think we have one fix in progress underway, but certainly there are a number of communications that we continue to provide to help everybody understand the direction we're all headed.
Very well.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope that we can really work some of this out because as you pointed out, we have issues with hiring teachers. They're a little different from the metropolitan area, but we all have issues hiring teachers. And I also want to put in a plug for students of different ethnic backgrounds and different colors. You know, we're constantly looking for that too. So I'm hoping children do think about going into the teaching profession and find that to be rewarding because, you know, all of our schools are looking for that opportunity to have, teachers of all different backgrounds for their students. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And then Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. Doan, have you and the board looked at other states and what they offer as far as reciprocity so you have a baseline?
Ms. Doan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, if you could clarify your question, I'm not quite sure. Looking at other states and their agreements.
Well, there are other states that have reciprocity agreements with other states, not Minnesota.
Right.
Have you looked at those kinds of agreements and what it is their expectation is?
Ms. Doan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Primarily, we've looked at our border states for how they are licensing people, what the options are for seeking licensure in those states. Some of the states that are closest to us do have options for licensure by exam, which at this point we're not able to do in Minnesota. So the details, the semantics like that say you can earn a license without preparation for that licensure area necessarily, simply by taking an exam, do cause some concern when we look at a blanket reciprocity agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
So does this NASD-TEC interstate agreement for educator licensure provide the Board of Teaching with any examples of, I think there are states, for example, in the Northeast that have reciprocity agreements. Do they provide you with that information as well? Because I know this is quite detailed, but I'm not sure it provides you with that.
Ms. Stoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, it doesn't really provide us with that. What it does provide us with is an opportunity to look at a database to say what are the requirements for licensure in that state, but doesn't necessarily detail what the agreements are between neighboring states or between any states for that matter.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Ms. Larson. Ms. Larson, this 122A.90 was enacted first in 1969. Do you have any history on that? No, not because you were here. Not because you were here, but because it was amended in 1998, and I know you were here then.
I was just graduating from high school at that time.
Well, it was amended in 1998, so any history to your knowledge? Or if not, maybe you could prepare a memo for us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, my recollection about the language in the compact is that whenever we've had discussions about out-of-state applicants, it's really been much more under 122A.23. Mm. And if I may make one observation for policymakers, the tension or one of the tensions that you're seeing here about the need for rigor and the desire for flexibility is rife throughout all of your discussions about licensure, in my opinion. Because on one hand, you are absolutely certain that rigor is very important, but there are other times when you can find good arguments for why flexibility would be desirable. And so there is this underlying tension that is never finally resolved and is reflected here today.
Thank you. Ms. Larson and Chair Mariani. My last statement is a comment, Representative Mariani, because you had the first bill that had an alternative pathway to licensure, one that I very much liked, because you did address diversity and the need for that, and I was sorry that that kind of got waylaid, but I think we also need to encourage that pathway that we have, and I know you've been working on that agreement now, so we really want to encourage that diversity in our teaching ranks. And St. Paul, too, I understand, is working on that on their own, so bless them. They're doing that. But there are paths for us to follow, and I hope that we can reach some agreement on reciprocity as well. But we do have available to us some ways to move other candidates into the classroom. And we can thank Representative Mariani for that.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And quite frankly, you were one of the leading proponents even before my bill came out. We have much good work that we can do together in the future, no doubt. So with that, thank you, Ms. Stone.
Thank you.
I appreciate your presence with us today and, again, your service at the Board of Teaching. Mr. Grathwall. Take your notes with you, and
thank you very much.
Let's keep working on good public policy. Let me just, members, we're going to adjourn because I've been trying not to look at Roger Erickson over there because he was going to do this, you know. But let me just, a couple of things very quickly. I do want to, in the spirit of acknowledging Representative Leidinger, I also want to represent my vice chair, Representative Reiner, who also will not be standing
right
for re-election. And Representative Reiner, you have been a good friend, a good colleague, and one heck of a good public servant and good policy mind in this legislature. And your fingerprints, your spirit is deeply embedded. And some very good statutes that we've enacted in here, but more importantly, really embedded in the hearts and minds of folks in Minnesota, and particularly the people around this committee and mine especially. And I just want to thank you. It's been a real privilege and an honor to serve with you.
Well, it's hard to follow that comment, but this is the committee where my heart resides. Education policy work has been important to me for the last 30 years as a mom, a community member, a school board member, and a legislator. And I think it has grabbed my heart for all the right reasons. It took me a while to get back to this committee, though. You know, the way committee assignments go, when I came, they don't like to put people who've been in education too long on education committees. They like to put everybody else on education committees, at least to start with. You may have experienced that, but I kept asking and kept asking. And I carried bills and policy, and I got back here. So, there's so much to say that I know I can't say it in 2 minutes, and I know that I'll get the, you know, high sign coming. But what I'll say is, you know, I've worked on some things that have been really important to me, and I think most of you know that assessment, testing, in the broadest sense of the word, measures of educational success, how we guide our students through assessment, has been at the heart of what's important to me. And one of the first things I did was carry legislation addressing the report card. And my reason for that was, how do we talk about a successful school? What are the measures we look at? What's fair? What gives you that 360 point of view? And a lot of what I've done, not only as a legislator, but in my public life has been about what I call a roundtable process. And that's where a lot of my theories about assessment and measurement come from. And that's that 360 view. You need to, you know, I say put the problem in the middle of the table, put people around the problem who have various expertise and get that full view. Well, that's what assessment is all about, that full view. Walk around and see what the problem looks like. Don't get sidetracked by the perspectives of the individuals at the table. It's the problem that should guide the discussion. So what I give freely the work I've done to all of you, and I expect you to carry on that roundtable. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be this emotional. It's been important work for me, and I hope it'll continue to be important work for you. And I know the capacity to continue to do that work resides in the public. That is the strength of democracy. We are a citizen legislature. You know, we carry the wisdom of the people with us. So thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Thank you, Representative Breinert. And thank you all for enriching this process over the last, for as long as you've served. But certainly this committee, this particular committee's life for the last couple of years. Thank you very much. It's been a privilege and an honor to serve with each and every one of you. Thank you. So with that, this committee will stand adjourned.